Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, the Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. This program is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical, folk, jazz, blues, rock, country, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's musical trivia questions come to us from the website onthisday.com. Question number one, it was on this day back in which year that the Dick Clark Show debuted on ABC TV? Here's a big hint. Connie Francis, Pat Boone, and Jerry Lee Lewis were the first performers to appear on this show. So was that A, 1946, B, 1958, C, 1965, or D, 1977? The Dick Clark Show debut. So which year was that anyway? And question number two, it was on this day back in 1967 in New York that Aretha Franklin recorded her signature song. What was that song's title? Was that A, Da Do Ron Ron? Was it B, Baby Love? Was it C, Respect? Or was it D, New York, New York? Aretha Franklin's signature song. What was its title anyway? The answers to these two important questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from that same website, onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of February 14th. Well, it was on this very day, back in 1958, on CBS television, that Walter Cronkite reported that the Iranian government has banned rock and roll because it is against the concepts of Islam and also a hazard to health. The Iranian ban of rock and roll, that was 1958 today. And it was 60 years ago today, 1965, that singer Nat King Cole died of complications following surgery for lung cancer at the age of 48. And this was 1965 today. Neil Young's Old Man introduces our country and folk music news. It's titled, My Middle Age Music Crisis. Studios and studies have found that music discovery stops in our early 30s. At 32, could I avoid becoming a washed music listener? This is published in Esquire magazine, December the 6th, 2024, by Max Crea. One balmy evening this past summer, I was hanging out in the bustling courtyard of a bar under the Williamsburg Bridge, celebrating a friend's 30th birthday. I was having a nice enough time making small talk and various partygoers, until a stranger asked me what new music I had been listening to. The trains above screeched to a halt. Everyone at the party fell silent and looked my way. I racked my brain. Surely there was something cool and obscure I could turn this person onto, and I had nothing. The truth was that most of what I'd been enjoying fell into two categories. Old Dad, which included Tom Waits, Lucinda Williams, Simon and Garfunkel, or New Dad, Vampire Weekend, Sturgill Simpson, Solange. There's a technical term for what was happening to me. I was becoming washed.
Look at how the time goes past, but I'm all alone at last, rolling home to you. Oh, man, take a look at my life, I'm a lot like you.
I'd recently turned 32, which, according to both informal studies of streaming data and anecdotal evidence from the old people in my life, is right around when this particular affliction typically hits. Browse around online and you will learn that your tastes are shaped in adolescence. Your openness to new music peaks in your early 20s, and music discovery stops at 33. Of course, any reminder that you are moving ever nearer to death is disconcerting, but more than the existential ramification of taste freeze, my concerns ran practical. I wanted to feel something. A few months before my friend's fateful birthday party, I'd ended a relationship that began in my mid-20s. By its final days, my sense of self was so fixed that it was almost as though I didn't exist. I was more concept than person. In the aftermath, I didn't want to radically upend my life or even buy a sports car. I just wanted to wake up, to throw out old routines and experience the world with fresh eyes and, as it were, ears. To put it more plainly, what I wanted was a shot in the arm. Finding a new favorite song is invigorating, a stimulant on par with a great cup of coffee or a runner's high, and I was facing diminishing returns from old go-tos. In general, I felt the particularly wonderful jolt of new discovery less frequently and intensely than I once had. How tragic it would be to only experience this feeling at a slow, sporadic pace. Some of my old favorite artists released new material. But was it even possible to experience new music the way I had at 14 or 24, back when the Red Hot Chili Peppers felt rousingly subversive and Kanye West seemed like he actually might have been touched by God? Is there something biological about being in your 30s that limits the satisfaction that listening to new music produces? That closes the brain off to new sounds? That sparks an insatiable appetite for Wilco? I was going to find out. Recent research confirmed that as the brain develops, it becomes harder to absorb a new language. I worried that the same was true of music. That as we age, the mind becomes less receptive to anything unfamiliar. Indeed, according to Elizabeth H. Margulis, professor and director of the Music Cognition Lab at Princeton, if you just look at the literature, most people think there's something special about adolescence when it comes to music discovery. There's a technical term for what was happening to me. I was becoming washed. Margulis, though, is skeptical that that's really true. Instead, she believes that young people's deep, lasting connection to music mainly results from where and how they're finding it. Meaningful experiences are part of how you build up this sense of what music means and how it's important to you, she says. If we're just searching around on Spotify, that's a single-dimensional musical experience. We don't have a lot of context. versus a new musical style coming along with the summer, when we were in a different place, hanging out with different people. Doug Ford, Spotify's head of emotional and editorial and music culture between 2013 and 2018, recently told The New Yorker that the company's algorithm and user experience have evolved to prioritize passive listening. In other words, the platform keeps listeners' content through homogeneity. Personally, I've noticed that when the platform serves me a new song I like, I tend to feel mild enjoyment rather than a fiery passion. More often, I feel numb from the overall monotony and repetition. I'm far from the only person who feels frustrated by the blandness of the streaming experience. Sean McAuliffe, the CEO of NTS Radio, an increasingly popular genre-agnostic, commercial-free online alternative to traditional radio, told me that among young people, there's a lot less anxiety about staying current. Good music is good music, no matter the genre or period. It was a liberating notion. I began to think that branching out could be as valuable and cool, even, as looking ahead. I was reminded that as you age, there are two options. You can kind of embrace what you already like, unselfconsciously, and keep an open mind to other things, or you can just dive 100% deep into what the kids like, and you'll just come off as a total poser. There's a happy medium of being washed, but also open. Though some music may not actually be new, it might be new to you, and it can produce strong feelings. And really, at a certain age, you just have to be grateful for that. As long as you're feeling, you ain't dead yet. Mark Howard's Zen introduces our jazz and blues music news. The mindful music that makes us lose our minds. From Radio 3's relaxation mixes to the piano in the spare room. The much vaunted soothing power of music is sometimes overrated. This is published in telegraph.co.uk, 12 January 2025, Christopher Howes and Guy Kelly. There is plenty about modern life to cause celebration and aggravation in equal measures. Thankfully, old hand Christopher Howes and young gun Guy Kelly are here to dissect the way we live now. Christopher Howes starts the conversation with this. Unwind? Do I look like I need unwinding? Radio 3 now offers a world of calm with a blend of meditative orchestral movements, gentle piano pieces, and choral reflections under the general title Unwind, and specific packages such as Mindful Mix. It's elevator music for an elevator that's always going down. Opening up my mindful mix, gentle classical for stillness and calm, I soon found myself in William Byrd. Now, I have the greatest respect for Byrd, and he did not write his music to tune out to. In his day, music to Byrd was not a matter of life and death. It was more important than that. Mindful mix does not announce the pieces. On the BBC Sound site, it gives titles, but does not name the performers. So for me, at least, Mindful Mix does not soothe the itch to know and inquire. It annoys in a different way from Radio 3 itself, where horrible trailers advertise items of negative interest on various BBC channels. These trailers emulate annoying advertisements on classic FM. But, head for the hills, here comes Ethel Smith. She's lurching over the horizon because it's against the law to play more than six pieces in a row without a woman composer. And there are only so many of them to go around. Ethel Smith's violin and horn concerto is about as still and calm as Margaret Dumont in Duck Soup. Mindful Mix is a mixtape put together by someone you're not in love with. The final horror of Unwind is the occasional addition of natural sounds. Sleep beside summer crickets? Whoops, here comes a recording of a rushing stream. Excuse me for a moment while I pop off to the loo. And then Guy Kelly adds, "My wife brought me a piano for Christmas. It is digital and second hand, and three of the keys stick slightly when you play them, but it has at least done what she hoped, which has stopped me from banging on about how I reckon I'd really be great at playing the piano if only somebody would get me one. Well, it turns out playing the piano is way harder than it looks. In the first week, I spent around 22 hours a day at the keyboard, mainly watching YouTube tutorials and failing to follow them, then straying towards old videos of the Johns, Elton and Doctor, playing effortlessly and wondering whether I ought to obtain a severe decades-long drug addiction, or B, a very large hat, or C, both in order to succeed. This dedication charmed my wife for a while, until I started to ignore her and only leave the piano, formerly spare room, to eat and sleep. I have now had my piano playing time capped, but there are windows of opportunity, such as just before bedtime. When my wife goes off for a bath at about 10 p.m., I sit down at the piano and noodle around, pretending I'm Roger from 101 Dalmatians, or if I'm feeling fruitier, Berlioz from The Aristocats. A while later, she will come by, pajamas on, hair in a towel, pure relaxation on her face, and I'll implore her to listen. She will sigh. "I really need to go to bed," she'll say. I'll smile, take a deep breath, and start playing. Then she will interrupt. "I obviously can't hear anything. You've got the headphones plugged in." Valuable feedback. I rip the headphones cord from the piano and begin serenading her again. After a few bars, she raises her eyebrows in polite acknowledgement. "Can you tell what it is yet?" I'd say, cursing the fact that I've now killed any romantic mood by invoking Rolf Harris. "Yeah, that's the introduction to Let It Be again," the last night she'll reply, walking off. And it probably will be, for I only know about four snippets of four songs so far, but I go to bed pleased as punch at the morsel of recognition. And so that's my advice to Christopher. If you don't like the music, try making your own instead. It might not be relaxing, but you sure find out how hard it is. And in music research and technology, we have this article, "How Your Brain Tells Speech and Music Apart." This is written by Andrew Chang in Scientific American on the 27th of December, 2024. People generally don't confuse the sounds of singing and talking. That may seem obvious, but it's actually quite impressive, particularly because we can usually differentiate between the two even when we encounter a language or musical genre we've never heard before. How exactly does the human brain so effortlessly and instantaneously make such judgments? Scientists have a relatively rich understanding of how the sounds of speech are transformed into sentences and how musical sounds move us emotionally. When sound waves hit our ear, they activate the auditory nerve within a part of the inner ear called the cochlea. That in turn transmits signals to the brain. These signals travel the so-called auditory pathway, first to the subregion for processing all kinds of sounds, and then to dedicated music or language subregions. Depending on where the signal ends up, a person comprehends the sound as a particular type of meaningful information and can distinguish an area from a spoken sentence. That's the broad strokes of story of sound processing. Borodin's String Quartet No. 2 in D introduces our local music news. Upcoming concerts, Duke University Department of Music, January through February 2025. Coming up on February 15th, Chompy String Quartet presents Chompy at Duke, a collaboration sponsored by Duke Arts. Concerts held at Baldwin Auditorium on campus, open to the public. Tickets are free, but they are required. So, how did you do on today's trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, it was on this day, back in which year, that the Dick Clark Show debuted on ABC TV. And I gave as a hint the fact that Connie Francis, Pat Boone, and Jerry Lee Lewis were the first performers to appear on that show. So was that A, 1946, B, 1958, C, 1965, or D, 1977? Correct answer, answer B, 1958. As noted in various sources, the Dick Clark Show, also known as Dick Clark's Saturday Night Beechnut Show, was an American musical variety show broadcast weekly in the United States on the ABC television network, 7:30 to 8 p.m. Eastern Time, on Saturdays from February 15, 1958, through September 10, 1960, sponsored, except for the first two shows, by Beechnut Gum. Given that the show ran continually year-round for over 2.5 years, resulting in 136 episodes, there really were no seasons as such. Dick Clark, hosting throughout the entire series, introduced musical guests who sang or performed, or more often lip-synced, their latest popular hit. Often after a performance, and sometimes before, Clark interviewed the musicians. Between performances on some shows, he also interviewed non-musical celebrity guests, usually a television or movie star. The show was typically staged live in New York City at Manhattan's Little Theater, now the Helen Hayes Theater, 240 West 44th Street. For the Manhattan broadcast, the audience sat in theater seats rather than standing and dancing, as was done in Clark's concurrent pop music show, American Bandstand. And the answer to our second question, it was on this day back in 67 in New York that Aretha Franklin recorded her signature song. What was that song's title? Was it A, Da-Do-Ron-Ron? Was it B, Baby Love? Was it C, Respect? Or D, New York, New York? Correct answer, that would be answer C, R-E-S-P-E-C-T. As noted by Carrie O'Dell in the Library of Congress, LOC.gov, entry, 1967 was not only an important year in music, it was also an important one in American history. It was the year racially charged outbursts broke out all over the country, in Minneapolis, Detroit, Milwaukee, Washington, D.C., and Buffalo, New York. Meanwhile, late in that year, in New York, an anti-Vietnam War protest resulted in over 200 arrests, including activists Dr. Benjamin Spock and Allen Ginsberg. That same year, the National Organization of Women, NOW now, published its Bill of Rights. Amidst this turmoil, Franklin's respect, her proclamation edict, resonated with a variety of listeners, African Americans, women, and the youth of America. As Franklin states in her autobiography, it reflected the need of a nation, the need of the average man and woman in the street, the businessman, the mother, the fireman, the teacher. Everyone wanted respect. It was also one of the battle cries of the civil rights movement. The song took on monumental significance. So, let's close out today's program with Aretha's Respect. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. This program's also available as a podcast after the broadcast in our website, ncreadingservice.org. As we leave you now, remember these words. Kindness is a language which blind people see and deaf people hear. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. If you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me at 919-832-5138. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Music Review, underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information, or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. So long, until next time.